for this workshop is Creative Action of the Spirit. We've got two speakers. The first one is Brian C. Haven't known Brian very long. He's only been here for a year. But he's come to my home group and spoken several times at various groups. He's got a great story. I really admire his recovery. And we're glad he ended up in Oklahoma. Brian. Now we'll have a 15-minute meditation.
Yeah, we'll have a 15-minute silent meditation. Just kidding. 25?
25.
Okay, 25 minutes. All right, I can do that. Good morning, everyone. My name is Brian, and I'm an addict. It is really a delight to be here at this convention. It's my first convention in Oklahoma. I want to thank Greg for inviting me to come share a little bit at this workshop. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I don't want to have to use my outside voice. So as Greg said, I've been in Oklahoma for all of a year. So my recovery began and most of it took place in Los Angeles, California. And in fact, I was born about 3 miles down from Jimmy Kennan's home, which is where the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting took place. My clean date is July 3rd, 2003. So far so good. So it's last year I took 20 years.
Nice.
And so I moved to Oklahoma December of 22, so I've been here all of 13 months, and it's been terrific, and I love the fellowship here. I think it's amazing how lucky I am to have found quality Narcotics Anonymous meetings and people here in Oklahoma. In Los Angeles, California, there are probably 200 NA meetings per week across the county. In fact, next week is the home area's convention, San Fernando Valley, that regularly has 5,000 to 10,000 people attending on Saturday night. So it's cool to be here at a convention. I won't be able to go to the San Fernando Valley next week, but I feel right at home. And that's what I love about Narcotics Anonymous, is that it's a place where I can show up and feel right at home wherever I go. So I'll qualify a little bit and then we'll get into the topic. So, like I said, I grew up in Los Angeles, California, in a place called Sun Valley, which is a suburb north of Los Angeles and our birthplace. And, I've been around the fellowship for a long time. My father was an addict, and I grew up in a family of addicts. And we used to send in the treatment centers in the 80s. And I used to remember being in family groups and just sort of looking around and just thinking, what's wrong with these people? I'm never going to end up like these guys. Never, right? And what's interesting is, I had a hard time figuring out that I was an addict. Part of it was I didn't want to be like my father, and the other part of it was I had a very early idea of what it meant to be an addict, right? So in my neighborhood, which was a poor neighborhood, there was a lot of people that my mom would point out and say, don't ever be like this guy. And one of them was a guy named Joe. And Joe liked to slam dope in the alley, and he would hop our fence and steal tin cans, and I'd see him drinking out of a paper bag, and my mom would say, hey, don't ever be like Joe. And I said, you got it, Mom, right? So, when I developed my addiction, or let's just say I've always been an addict, and it became obvious to me, I didn't really look like Joe. And so I had a real hard time with that. And it was just like, well, if I don't look like Joe, then I must not have this disease. So I should just keep going, right? Back then, before I got clean, I actually used to work in film in Los Angeles. I'd be a union worker. I used to build sets, and then I got clean in 2003. I'm a product of treatment centers. I went to treatment 5 times. And, I grew up in the juvenile justice system. I didn't finish high school. And, the fifth time, a lot of times people ask me what was different. So there were two things that were different. One is that I realized I had the ability to lie to myself. So when I look back at my history, it's like I could clean up for periods of time, but as soon as I heard my family saying, Brian's doing so good, I knew I was going to go back to it, right? And I just thought, I just need the right circumstances. I need the right amount of money, the right person to be with, the right place to live, and I can make this work again. And then, within 6 to 9 months, I'd be incarcerated again, right? And when I saw that, it terrified me, because I knew I could lie to you, but I didn't really think I could lie to myself. And So I knew my own mind was trying to kill me, and I had to listen to other people because I couldn't trust my own thinking, right? And but that was a real moment of clarity for me. The other thing that changed was I had a full and thorough introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. And so I went to a program in North Hollywood called Cry Help, which was started by a guy named Bill Beck, who was a good friend of Jimmy Kinnon's. My grand sponsor is Jack B., who started the first Santa Fe Area Service Office at Jimmy Kinnon's house in 1975. So there's I'm not resorting to credentialism, but it's just there's a long lineage, you know. And I got real lucky, right, because, you know, why I've been able to stay around as long as I have is that I got the opportunity to be taken under the wing of people, and they showed me how to live this program outside of meetings, right? Because I wasn't really sure if people really did this, right? And when you get to be around people and see how they live outside of meetings and how they practice the principles of our program, and they give you the game on being clean, right? That's a pretty convincing thing to do. And so I felt very lucky for that, and I know not everybody has that opportunity, right? Because, you know, I work, you know, in mental health. So eventually after I got clean, I became a clinical psychologist. And, you know, I worked in, you know, integrated behavioral health care and addiction treatment. But that's my job. That's not my recovery, right?
That's right.
And that's a mistake that people make. I get paid to do that, right? My recovery happens afterwards. My recovery happens on Saturday morning at 10:30 and coming to a workshop. Right? So, you know, when I saw him, let me check the time, make sure I'm just filling up the space, right? So, you know, when I was invited to the workshop, as you know, I'm nervous because I don't really like to speak or to share, right? I'm just not good at that. And you know, if I'm in a meeting and I'm thinking about what I'm going to share, it's like I don't hear anything, right? So I'm just sort of obsessed, and I'm always like really self-critical about how I speak, right? So especially when I was new, like I basically have three shares, right? Like one's going to be like, hey, I hope the old timers don't think I'm a moron, and I'm going to try and like say it this way. The next one is, you know, I might say something, you know, for a newcomer, but then a lot of times I feel like I'm still a newcomer too, so I'm like, oh man, if I say if you're new, are people going to be taking my inventory, right? And then the third way I share is just being real and from the heart and what's going on with me right now. But I marshal myself together, and I get up and I do it when I'm asked because I think it's important. Recovery is very different in Oklahoma than it is in Southern California. And I've been, you know, everywhere, and I've been to NA meetings everywhere, and you know, it's a different vibe here. There's more competition from other fellowships, right? And there's also different ways that meetings are done that it took a minute for me to get adjusted to, right? Now, this is the second time I've moved from Los Angeles. I actually lived in San Diego, California for about 6 years. And what's really tough about it is, you know, you go from a place where I could walk into a meeting where I know 80% of the people that are there, and then I have to, like, show up at a place where I don't know anybody, right? And but I knew what to do, right? I get back to basics, and I just started going to meetings. That's where I met Greg over at 33rd in Edmond. And it is so, it was, I forgot how hard that is. I would go to a meeting, and I'm just like anyone from outside? I'm like, I'm not saying anything. And then I get, like, bum-rushed, and people ask me if I have a basic text or not. And I'm like, hey, I'm not new. I'm new to Oklahoma, right? And it's like, it's so uncomfortable, right? And I'm just like, oh, man, I forgot. I forgot about that. And so I told myself, hey, man, if a newcomer can do this, because I tell them to do it all the time, then I can do this, right? And I just went to meetings. Every day, bang, 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 right? Over until I find my people, right? Until I find my group. And now I'm pretty settled. But that's tough. And I'm glad to be reminded of what it's like to be new and to have to sort of resort back to the basics, right? I guess I should get to the topic. So, you know, sometimes, like, when there's a topic that sort of seems obscure to me, I'm like, do I need to study for this? Or, like, how do I talk about this? And But the messages I got were really cool. It's like sort of like, you know, share whatever, and you know. But I did sort of look up what creative action of the spirit means, and I found some interesting stuff. It's great when we sort of like pick up books and stuff like that. It is in our book, Guiding Principles, in the first tradition, which is really about unity, right? But it's also in about seven other places in our literature. Actually every piece of literature from IPs to Living Clean, the basic text. We'll talk about creativity and action in the spirit. So looking at some of that, like, stuff just stands out to me, right? And I'm just like, oh, okay, so maybe I can talk about some of that stuff. So, you know, first, you know, I sort of look at the statement as like, you know, creativity. I was always a creative person when it came to getting dope. Like, I could manipulate you, I could figure out how to get away with it, I can steal your dope and help you look for it, right? And I can do all this stuff, right? And so there's this sort of creative energy that I have. And, you know, like a lot of good advice, when we get to the program, it's about how to apply those gifts and those talents into something productive and healthy for ourselves, right? And so I like the creativity part. And then, and I like the action part too, right? And so I sort of put action and expression sort of in the same way, creative action or creative expression. This is an action program, right? And, you know, it matters what you do, not what you think or what you feel, right? I mean, it matters what you think or feel, but I mean, you know, in the end, you know, you can sort of see someone's gratitude by what they do. And, you know, you can see how much they've recovered by their actions, right? And that's my opinion, of course, but, and then the spirit, right? Which is sort of, where am I coming from and who am I? Right, and I didn't really have much of a spirit when I got here. Right, I was sort of a, you know, I just wanted to be somebody else. And the idea of having a spirit, you know, my spirit, if anything, you know, was, you know, not particularly good. And that was expressed in my behavior, right? And all the things I did, you know, to feel ashamed about or that injured other people or myself. That was the state of my spiritual wellness or spiritual well-being, right? So I had some experiences, and this is before I even could think of things like creative action of the spirit, that really, I think, stand out to me as, like, these were, like, expressions of my spirit, and these are creative actions of my spirit, right? So I'm going to go just over a couple of those and to say how that I related to that those readings through that. you know, I'm a big guy with service and service commitments, and especially in Southern California, when you take a commitment, you show up, and then if you don't show up, that commitment's gone, right? And it's really just sort of very rigorous about those things. You know, it's sort of less so here, but so I had a commitment for about 9 years at my old home group in Los Angeles, and it was to bring a cake, and it was to bring coffee stuff. And so at the meeting, I'd have to get up early at the end and not hear people sharing, and go in there and start cleaning up everything, right? And without fail, they'd leave a mess, right? Addicts would leave a mess. Chocolate smears, like, you know, sweetener wrappers, and I'm just like, cool. So one day I get this idea where I get this huge bowl, right, and I just put the word trash on it, right? And I put the other trash can right there, and I'm like, all right, this will take care of it. And I come in after the meeting, bowl's empty. And it's just all trash on the counter, right? And I probably had about 2 years clean at this time. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm like, these addicts, man, it's like so messy. And so I'm getting resentful and sort of working myself up. And then I have this moment where I realize, and I say to myself, is this what it's like to have to clean up after people? And I'm like, oh, no, right? I was like, oh, man, oh, no, right? I had never understood what it was like for people who had to clean up after me my whole life. I was just like, whoa. I was like, oh, man. And from that moment, it was a joy and a pleasure to clean up after that meeting, right? And I put everything into it because it was my way of making things right, right? And also of you know, starting to become and grow into a different person, right? And so that was like a, you know, that was a moment of surrender, and I've had a lot of moments of surrender like that. But it was beautiful how it came from being of service, right, and to being into something that I really didn't feel like I wanted to do, and then suddenly I just have all this empathy for all the people who looked out for me or cared for me, or my mom and my dad, or people who cleaned up after me, and And it changed the way that I approached things, right? My spirit would come out, and it's like, and now I'm somebody who, and I'm shocked at this, like, I when I walk around, like, I will see myself picking up someone else's trash, right? I'm a guy who throws my trash out the car window, right? Like, and I am now somebody who picks up other people's trash, and I'm like, what? Like, how can I explain a change like that other than a power greater than myself and this program and Narcotics Anonymous, right? And it's so amazing to me that how I could be such a different person, genuinely, right? you know, I also think creative action comes from intuition. And as we get more time and are exposed to more recovery, I think that, you know, we get intuitions about what the right thing to do is, right? And the first time that I had that intuition, so I was, you know, going through the 12 steps so with my sponsor. I had probably about maybe a year and a half or something. And I had gone through the 12 steps in treatment. But, you know, for me, there's a difference between, working the step, right, doing your paperwork, and taking the step in your life and practicing the principle in your life, right? And I didn't know that back then, but the reason I was staying clean is because I was practicing these principles and taking the step in my life, right? And it's such a weird concept because I remember being in treatment and seeing in our 12th step that it says practice these principles in all our affairs, and I was like, principles? I don't see that word anywhere else in there. I'm like, what are they talking about, right? It's so odd. I'm like, practice these in all our affairs. But eventually I learned that all of our steps have principles, and it is living these principles every day that is what keeps us in the place that we need to be. So I'm going to my Friday night meeting, and I pull into a gas station, and I see a guy that I ripped off pumping gas, right? And I'm like, uh-oh, right? And I suddenly have this, like, you know, fear, and he, like, looks at me, like, with these cartoon eyes, and, you know, so I'm just like, oh, man, so I just drive off, and I go to the meeting. Right? I know, I have a year and a half, right? I see my sponsor, and I say, hey, sponsor, I just saw this guy that I burned, man, and he's kind of a normie. I just sort of pulled him into everything and took his money, and, you know, I did these horrible things to him, and I feel like I need to do something about this or whatever, right? Should I go and make amends? Or, right? And he's like, you ain't there yet, right? And it's true because, you know, one of the things about amends is, you know, sometimes people just want to admit they have a problem, make amends, and then tell people how to be clean, right? Yeah. And for me, it's like, you know, the amends, sometimes 6 and 7 gets overlooked because they're just, you know, they're sort of like together, but... You know, how can you make things right if you're still the same person, right? Like, my history was always to say I messed up and I'm sorry, and then I just do it again, right? Because I'm the same guy. And if I don't change, right, in 6 and 7, if I don't become someone else, then what good is it to try and make it right, right? Because then that's just selfishly wanting to make it right for me, right? I want your forgiveness, right? I actually talked about that in Spiritual Principle of Day this past couple of weeks. You know, I just don't want to feel bad about what I do, so forgive me, right? So anyways, I tell him, and... I think he's going to tell me to drive back to the gas station, and, you know, you better, you know, and he just says, did you use with the guy? And I said, well, yeah, I mean, but he's not like us, he's not an addict. He says, did you use with the guy? And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, okay, well, listen, he needs to learn to stay away from addicts. So, and I was so shocked, right? I'm like, what? Right? He says, you know, leave him alone. And I was like, what? Right? And I was like, what I didn't know was that he was trying to keep me away from people that had been in my old life,
right.
And that he didn't think I was ready to do something and make contact with someone that I'd gotten loaded with, right? I didn't know that then, but I was like, our sponsor is so cool, right? I don't have to do anything, right? A month later, I pull into this fast food restaurant, Jack in the Box, and I pull up to the window, and it's him. And I get those big cartoon eyes again, right? And I'm like, hey, what's up? And so he's super nervous, and, you know, and so I drive, and I was just sort of hit with this moment of, like, you know, what kind of person do I want to be? What I think is the right thing to do here? And so I drove to the bank, and I was making, I don't know, $8 an hour at the time or something. I drove to the bank, and I took out all the money I had, and I drove back around to the... It was a Jack in the Box restaurant, and I get back in line and order a soda, and I see him in the window, like, looking, like, oh, God, what's this guy doing back? Right, he's going to rip me off again. And I pull up and I say, hey, man, I said, I'm real sorry about what I did. And this is all the money I got right now, and I want to give it to you. And it's nothing close to what I took from you. But, you know, I'm a different person now, and I'm in recovery. And, you know, I just want to let you know that, you know, I'm sorry for what I did. And he was, like, so thrilled, right? But it was something that I did, and I didn't tell anybody, really. I just knew in that moment that that's who I needed to be, right? And that was an action of my spirit, right? Because, you know, I people had already done those things with me and forgiven me, right? And so I just knew, like, and that's a moment where I'm like, wow, that is, I don't know where that intuition came from. And I don't know, you know, I felt it was right, and I didn't think it was, you know, super risky. And, but that was the first time I sort of made a decision on my own, you know, without asking spons first. And over the years, right, everything I do, I can tell is an expression, an action of my spirit, right? When I got my first new car in the program, I pull up to my sponsor's house, and he says, hey, he says, this is a pretty nice car. I said, well, thanks. And he says, you want to keep it? And I said, yeah. And he said, keep it full of newcomers. Right? And so for 10 years, I picked up people at my treatment center every week, and I took them to a meeting and coffee, right? And, you know, and I never lost the car. I don't know if that's related or not. It's kind of cool, right? And, oh, five? Okay. Yeah, so, you know, I think when I think about what I need to do in my daily program, and it comes from my spirit, right? My spirit now sort of tells me, hey, you know, do I need to say yes to this? Do I need to say no to this? You know, I try to be the best me as much of the time as I can, right? And when the best me thinks and speaks and acts for the rest of me, you know, that's when I think I'm in really in touch with my spirit, right? And then being creative about how to be of service, being creative about how to express that. I'm always looking for opportunities to express my spirit, right? Because it's the spirit of gratitude. Like, I was saved from prisons, jails, institutions, death, through no action of my own. Like, you know, I'm not somebody who was like, I am going to get clean. It's like, you know, LAPD is, you know, who took me to, you know, treatment. And and so, you know, now my program looks pretty similar as it did when I was new. I mean, when I was new, I went to 5 to 7 meetings a week. I go to fewer now, but there's not very many things that I don't still do. And when I work with new guys, right, I'm somebody who is not going to ask people to do things that I'm not willing to do myself, right? So I take the steps in my life. I go to meetings. I have a sponsor. As a sponsor, I work with others. I be of service. And it's in everything I do, you know. And I didn't really think about it this way until, you know, I started sort of reading up to get here. But putting chairs away, or, you know, even showing up on time is an act of, you know, it's a creative expression of my spirit. I'll probably tell you one more story in line with this. So showing up on time was a big defect of mine, or not showing up on time, right? And I had a lot of defects, and I was not somebody who was very skilled at living life, right? And so one day, my sponsor says, hey, you know, we're going to go to a book study Thursday night, I remember. He says, meet me at the pad at 7 o'clock. And I said, all right. So I showed up 7:05. He's gone. Nice. Right? So I drive over to the book study, and I say, hey, I confront him, right? I say, hey, man, what the hell? And he just looks at me and says, 7:05 ain't 7 o'clock. And I was all, oh, okay, right? It had never occurred to me that you wouldn't wait for me, and that I, right? And that I needed to actually be on time for anything, right? And then since that time, you know, I've never been late for stuff. So hopefully, you know, I made some level of sense, you know, and you got to know me a little bit. Again, I really appreciate the opportunity to come share a little bit, and looking forward to our next workshop speaker. So hope we have a good convention. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
I got several chairs up here.
Yeah.
People in the back want to come sit down. There's a couple over here. Our next speaker, Tammy with a Y, Tammy R, not O, hails from Seaside, Oregon. Her home group is Tools of Recovery. And while I have never met Tammy, I'm excited to hear her story. I love getting fed, and these conventions do that. So, Tammy.
Thank you. I'm just going to take a moment. You're welcome to join me if you want to. I'm just going to take a moment, and you're welcome to join me if you'd like to. I'm Tammy, and I'm a very grateful recovering addict. And I am in the most beautiful place in Oklahoma right now. I have the best view. You all are so beautiful. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm just jittery inside. I'm so grateful Brian went first. Thank you. It's one of the things about, I haven't spoken at a workshop in a really long time, and what I love is our perception, you know? And I told my sponsor, Donna, if you could please time me, if you don't mind. I think it's 25 minutes. Is that the worst thing that could happen is nothing, because I'm not going to get kicked out of NA if I screw up. I'm hesitant to talk, to say my clean date. Because whoever woke up the earliest today has the most time. I'm also grateful for my clean time, because my body is used to being clean. And I remember when it wasn't. So by all the higher powers that be, because I'm not biased, I like them all. As long as they're loving and kind, come home to me. My clean date is 8/27/87.
Yeah.
When I was one. No. So I thought I only had like 15-20 minutes, which is, I do know how to talk, but so then my brain went, oh, maybe I didn't do this right. And I went, no, my higher power is present. So there is no wrong way, you know. So when I read, I had not read the Guiding Principles before. And when I read the tradition, well, in the Guiding Principles, I read it probably 2.5 times in the last couple of days. The thing that stuck out for me is unity. First of all, I'm so sorry. I want to thank Casey and Jeff and all the committee members for this convention. I get a little nervous and my brain cells go. I've never been to Oklahoma. I know that somewhere, like my ancestors came from here. And I have, this has been such an amazing journey for me from the time I got on the plane. You know, and I have, you know, there's a stereotype about Southern people being friendly and loving. You guys have met that stereotype. So I so appreciate you all. I got on the plane and I have a little bit of claustrophobia, and it comes, I know where it comes from. It comes from childhood trauma. And I'm like, you know, I'm Southwestern in there. And I'm like, I'm C, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be stuck in the middle, and that's okay. I know how to pray. I know how to meditate. From it, Narcotics Anonymous taught me that. And there's an aisle seat next to two people, and one's a peer support person. She's in recovery, and her partner is this wonderful person that works, you know, in the service to others. And oh my God, ever since then, from meeting Jeff and Casey and all you lovely people, it's like, this is, I know this is where I'm supposed to be. So I'm really very, very grateful. When, you know, I said I thought of unity, and I remember, you know, right when I got clean, you know, thinking back, I never felt a sense of belonging. You know, I learned to keep secrets at a really young age. I learned, even though I know it's not true, that I was responsible for other people's thoughts, feelings, and emotions. That it was because of me, my mom cried a lot. It was because of me and my dad, you know, he was an alcoholic. I was a middle child. I was the girl. I need to make everybody else okay. And I could never do it. I remember the first time I felt that, I was 5. And I just could never do that. And I really tried, really, really hard. And my nature is, I was, so backtrack, my brain goes loopy, but it usually comes back. So years ago, I was going to an NA meeting, and another meeting was ending in the small town, and there was this lady, and she was like, she went to a different fellowship, and she had the life, you know, and she was like much older. I guess now she's probably only been 10, 15 years older than I am now, but back then she was much older. She said, you can't be an addict because you're friendly. I'm like, what? She goes, addicts don't like people. And I went, oh, well, it's a good thing I don't listen to you, because I know I'm an addict, and I just enjoy people, you know. And I always wanted to please. So that's kind of, you know, when I was younger, this is just a backstory, is I learned how to check out. I learned how to dissociate really, really well. I didn't know it was called that. But I'd go in my room, even as a little girl, pull over the blankets, and I'd create this huge, huge, wonderful story. And I was the hero. And everyone liked me. I had a, you know, a short bed Chevy truck and a badass big dog in it. And I was afraid of dogs. I don't know, but that was my alter ego, you know. And, you know, and I would dissociate a lot. And I had, you know, I've already heard people, everyone that shared, I can relate to. You know, I had a speech impediment. Took me a while to catch on in school. You know, so checking out was huge. I don't usually talk about this. I just finished my 8th step, so my brain is really... when I was younger, I got into a lot of fights. And that has never been who I am. Because I always felt bad afterwards. But in the moment, I couldn't stop myself. Because all that anger and rage and not being good enough came out. And I felt so bad. And it wouldn't matter if you were a boy or a girl. I don't know that I always started it, but I sure was going to finish it. And no one would believe that knows me. And I'm not proud of that. And I'm not saying that to be a badass, because I really was never a badass, truly. I was a wannabe, but didn't really want to be. So, you know, I discovered substances, drugs, when I was 12. I mean, I had been doing the liquid substance because I'd sit in my dad's lap and, you know, do that and drink it. But when I consciously said I'm going to do this, I was 12 years old. And it was like I came home. I didn't have to worry so much. I didn't have to feel so different, you know, because I didn't feel. Because when I started, I was... That's what I did. And I babysat for people that were suppliers for the community. So I got it for free. And, you know, that was like, I didn't dissociate as much because I was doing it with drugs now, you know. So I experienced a lot when I was younger, and I saw what happened. One thing I didn't want is to end up in jail someday. Well, first of all, I'm claustrophobic, so that would have really sucked. And I had a little girl. And when I got pregnant, I knew that someone was going to love me no matter what. I was going to love that little baby. And I got what I wanted. I asked God for a little girl, healthy, then a little girl. Then I said, and if it's a little girl and healthy first, I want her to have curly hair. I have a beautiful daughter that's 40 now, and I got clean when she was 4. And the reason I got clean is because I was going to do all those things I said I wouldn't do if I had a child. I'm blessed because not everyone had those choices or their circumstances that I did, that I got to make that decision. You know, I had some resources, you know. So I had, you know, a best friend since before I was 14. And once I met her, I never got in another fight. So my fighting was from like middle, junior high, to, you know, in elementary. But she went to treatment, and I was very codependent, and it worked out. And she manipulated me to go to an NA meeting, and I said, "Of course I will. Those poor addicts, you know." She knew I was an addict because we did a lot of stuff together, you know, and so I said, "I can't. I've been getting high all day." She goes, "It's okay. No one will know." So my first meeting, I was high. And when they said there's surveillance, I went, "God, do I have some in my purse?" So I went to the bathroom to look and try to dump it out. And I went, "I can't do that, you know." So I'm like, "Ooh," the whole time. And I really felt bad for you guys. You know, I have a very empathetic heart. I don't have to learn to be compassionate and empathetic to others. I had to learn how to do that for myself. So I'm like, "Holy shit." I'm trying not to say the F word because I think there's some children here. Oh, side note, I love when I see children in meetings. I don't care if they're distracting, which they're not. I love babies because you know what? My addiction affected my child, and so did my recovery in the most positive way. So I'm never one that say don't bring children. You know what? I'd rather be around a disruptive children than someone like this, you know. If you're in NA and you're high, it's okay. Just don't share right until after the meeting. But I'm saying I don't want to be in a place where they're all loaded and stuff today. I want the babies. I want the children. I want them to see a new way of life. Right? So anyway, trying to make this quick because it's really about, I have a whole bunch of, I want to talk about the unity thing. So a couple of months later, I left and the seed was planted. The seed was planted. And I called it, and I've been trying and trying. Okay, once this is gone, I'm going to quit. Flush it down the toilet. Well, that is not going to happen. So it's like 1:30 in the morning, and I had this clarity because I sat in the rooms. Even though I was half-baked, you know, when you're coming down and you're like, ugh. You know, even though I heard something, and I'd been trying, and I realized all the times I would send my daughter to her bed early, or I'd stash my stuff and think she didn't know I got loaded, and she'd find, "Mommy, are you looking for this?" Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. All that time, and I was a hairdresser working in front of a salon, and I couldn't see myself. The real me was when, at about noon, I would think, "Oh, I get to go get my daughter from the daycare, Christian daycare, mind you, but before I do that, I'm dragged behind the salon, get high, and then go get her." That's who I thought the real Tammy was. And I realized my daughter was suffering because of me. I did not know I was good enough to get clean. I knew she was worth it, though. And at 1:30 in the morning, I called my friend Ball and I said, "I'm an addict." She says, "I know." And then the one that manipulated me, that knew me since before I was 14, that I introduced her to some drugs, she introduced me to others. I mean, yeah. So by the grace of all the higher powers that be, I haven't got loaded since I went to my second NA meeting on 8/27/87. So I walked in that room. I saw all these, I'm a wannabe Harley girl. I've been in too many car accidents. I decided I'm finally not going to get an endorsement because my daughter goes, "Mom, please." So don't. But I go into this meeting and there's all these Harleys, you know, and other bikes, and I'm like, "Oh, they're not going to let me in," even though I love to ride. I just knew I wasn't going to fit in, and I'm so shaking, I'm withdrawing, I'm scared to death. The withdrawal, I mean, I was shaking from withdrawals and anxiety galore. And they welcomed me. And I got my first basic text. It was given to me. And they said, keep coming back. We're going to love you till you can love yourself. And I'm like, okay. I mean, that's where my people pleasing was a good thing. Because they told me to do it. I was like, okay, I want you to like me, so I'm going to do it. So, you know, I kept coming back. And I got clean in Longview, Washington. And it's very strong NA. Very strong NA. And, you know, there's all these ways you're supposed to. That's creative. Okay, I know what it says, but we're talking about. Sorry, I'm old. Creative action of the spirit, right? So back in those times, we didn't, you know, I was like at 30 days. Well, first of all, this is a long time ago, I'd clean ashtrays, right? I'd clean out, yes. And I was always odd because I've never liked coffee. Gross me out. Yuck. I like tea in coffee cups, but I did smoke at the time, so I would clean the ashtrays, help set up, help break down, because I wanted, they said, if you get in the middle, you're not going to fall off the edges, because to me, unity is a sense of belonging, that's attachment to something. I didn't realize I had attachment problems. I had a loving mom, but she was like, we are in a very abusive household, you know? She was an abused mom. You know, she loved me the best she could, and she was very loving. But when you're living on, you learn to expect the unexpected, it's hard to really have connection. For me, anyway. That's for me. I'm not trying to speak for anyone else. So, unity, we're together, right? So when I'm helping you clean up those ashtrays, or I'm setting up and stuff, I'm going to have a sense of belonging. So at 30 days, which doesn't go, 30, 60, 90 days, I was taken along to the H&I meeting at the treatment center. You know, at 6 months, I was the H&I chair. And I didn't know what I was doing, right? But there was this old-timer there named Tim that said, Tammy, it's okay, you know? He'd say, oh, by the way, this is your service position. I'm like, what? And again, I wanted to belong. So you know, I got clean there. I was a part of that unity. Synergy is that energy that's combined by a whole bunch of us, you know. And it was so beautiful. And but 2 months clean, I'm in a boy. Well, he's a man. You know, and he had dimples. And he was cute. And you know, you give away drugs and, there are children here. I quit doing that. And the first time I really had that connection in that romantic way, not being loaded and I'm clean, I'm like, oh, I love him. and you know, I ended up marrying him. I'm not married now, but he gave me a really cute last name. I like the last name of Ray. I thought it was original. There's a lot of Tammy Lynn Rays in this world, especially in the South, I've learned. Do you know, side note, they said my license was expired. Oh, this is so weird. I went to, in Oklahoma, they said that's like 20 years ago. I said, I've never been to Oklahoma. But they had, the person had my same name and are so same age. Anyway, that's a side note. I just thought of that. Oh yeah, it was Oklahoma. Anyway, so God married. Don't you, I'm random. My sponsor's like, oh God, she's being her at least. So anyway, got married, and I have this strong NA. I mean, I love to go to dances. First dance, I wasn't going to dance, and they played my favorite music, like Skynyrd, you know. And I couldn't dance clean. My friend David said, oh, yes, you can. And I got out there, you know. So I had this huge support. And like I said, I got married. And we moved to Seaside, Oregon, which is on the north coast. I actually live in Warrington, which is like 15 minutes from there. But we moved to Seaside, right? And he was now he's a truck driver. He was fishing. And then he ended up doing long-haul trucking, so he wasn't home much. Unfortunately, he's one of the ones that didn't make it. He didn't get to stay and be clean like I do. And he's since passed. We were divorced before he died, but I have compassion for that man, you know. Anyway, so we moved to Seaside, and I'm all in love and, you know, got married. I broke the rules. You know, I got married right before I had a year clean. And I moved to Seaside about with a year and a half clean. And so I'm going to find NA meetings. Oh, I had a sponsor. I kept the same sponsor. I've had four sponsors in my recovery. So I moved to Seaside, and I'm looking for a meeting. And, you know, where I got clean was very strict, we'll say, right? It's you do the readings, you don't say anything in between them. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I was talking too much. Okay. So I moved to Seaside, and the meetings there, there were two NA meetings. One was inside a treatment center, and they did it way different because it was a regular meeting in the middle of the treatment center. You did Seventh Tradition. And then the other one, half the time someone showed up and half the time they didn't. And when they did show up, that other time they may or may not be loaded. And so they were reading different programs, literature and stuff. And I was like, oh my God. So I would just go to Longview all the time to go to meetings. But I did not have that sense of belonging, that, you know. And so I'd go to meetings and I'd say, that's against traditions. That's against traditions. And I'm actually not, like, I was very shy back then. Insecure, I should say, instead of shy. And so it did not bring people in. It pushed people away because that's what they knew, right? They knew a different 12-step language. So I had to be creative because my life depended on it. My life depends on me being unified with people in recovery because you are my family. I need that. And it's a very selfish thing. And I knew I had to share it. And so, you know, over time, what I'll say is we became an area again. A couple moved from Albany, and they had a lot more time than me, and they were very involved, and she ended up being my sponsor. 3 weeks after I asked her to be my sponsor, my mom died. And I found that with sponsors, I like kind people. I like people that are direct, that have a little not that they're going to be my mother, but Joy definitely was very maternal, and God gave me someone. He knew my mom was going to be dying. I didn't. It was sudden. But anyway, so we formed the North Coast area, which that's another workshop. We're not called that anymore. I have a little bit of a resentment still, but not as big as it was, so that's good. Anyway, so most of my recovery has been there because I had a year and a half. And so we, the area got going. We did fundraisers. I had to learn to say, well, according to tradition, I think this is how that we might want to do it, right? Being diplomatic. Because I wanted them to stay. I wanted to have that attachment. I wanted that belonging that Narcotics Anonymous has. But if I'm pointing out you shouldn't introduce yourself this way, it's not an and a thing, it's a clean thing. You know, my example is my responsibility. I am not in charge of how you introduce yourself. I'm here to love you and to receive love and to adhere to the traditions, and I learn about them more all the time. And so we got an area. I had a huge group of friends. We would go to dinner and coffee. I was the best man. I've always been Tammy, but I was the best man at my friend's wedding. I have godchildren from him. You know, and then things changed. You know, people got loaded, people died. This is in the last, like, 10 years or so. And I have time, right? Just because I've been around some more days or years doesn't mean I don't get lonely. It doesn't mean I don't need that unity. And so, you know, our area goes like this. Like, you know, our meetings get a little bigger, a little smaller. And that's okay. And I have this acceptance that I do what my higher power says. Now, do I always do that? Well, of course not, because not only am I an addict, I'm this thing called human, right? So, but you know, I am so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous and that creative spirit. If I had stuck to, I was called one of the worst things I think I could be called, an NA Nazi. And that hurt me so much, because that's a terrible thing to call somebody. And so it hurt me, but I was so passionate, because this saved my life. And now I love myself. I'm not doing it for my daughter anymore, you know? So it's been a journey, and I'm so grateful to be here, and I've grown even more, and that's what it's about for me. So, you know, I didn't know I was going to talk about the past up so much, but, you know, it really, for me, it's so important to look at the similarities and not the differences, and to stay my course with flexibility in the acceptance way, not being, you know, not flexible in, okay, I'm not going to stick to the traditions or whatever, you know. But just that knowing that we all get here, how we get here. And I love all 12-step programs, and my home is Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. Thank you.